Great.
You guys ready?
With the hills?
Okay.
The hills is awesome to get up.
Yeah. It is. It is. I'd like to call them to order the March 16th, 2023 Stormwater Utility Commission meeting. Jenna, can I have a roll call of the commissioners?
Commissioner Hawkinson?
Here.
Commissioner Mattson?
Here.
Vice Chair Thomas?
Here.
And Chair Crocker?
Here.
And Commissioner Parker is excused. Let the record show we have a quorum.
Okay. So let's move on to the next item. Do we have anyone coming in on Zoom or anything like that?
No.
Okay. And so we have no one in the audience that wants to speak. I've already talked to him about that. So we need to let's move on to council liaison comments. So I'd like to turn it over to Council Member Harry Green if he has any council liaison comments.
The comments that were made at the last meeting were laudatory of the committee and the committee staff, how hard they've worked to offer us a number of options, all with a very sharp pencil to try to keep from raising the stormwater assessment. And that was met with a lot of excitement from the council. So anyway, they think we're doing a good job, or you're doing a good job.
Great, thank you. Okay, thank you, Council Member Green. Let's move on to the next item, which is the director's report, and that will be Dennis Roberts for John Spiker today.
Hello, Dennis Roberts. I'm the senior stormwater engineer for Stormwater Utility. I'm taking over for John Spiker, as you mentioned, for today. So the director's report, Arizona Department of Water Resources visited the town. They had a community assist visit. They met with us in the field in December and again in January to hold an office visit to discuss developments with the FEMA regulatory floodplains. ADWR was interested in reviewing the last 5 years' worth of our projects permitted within FEMA special flood hazard areas to ensure that the town is upholding the National Flood Insurance Program rules and regulations. We did a site walk through the properties that are in process and the process of discussion. We had a discussion of our process and review of documenting for the pertinent topics of discussion. A summary report was provided to the town documenting our process and ADWR's findings, which included 3 requests for more information. They had an update of this Chapter 17 Floodplain and Erosion Hazard Management Ordinance to reflect current language found in the Arizona Floodplain Ordinance. 2, additional to develop a substantial damage standard operating procedure. 3, additional information related to a property located within La Cholla Air Park. The town has 30 days to provide a response to ADWR, which we are currently working towards. Once ADWR has found the town's response to be satisfactory, we will present this information in more detail to the commission if desired. Some 2023 rainfall amounts, some great news on the rainfall and snowfall fronts this year. Mount Lemmon has seen nearly 100 inches of snowfall this winter. Great to see the snow-capped mountains for such a long period of time, and really helps kickstart the regrowth since the Bighorn Fire of 2020. On the rain side, Oro Valley has seen nearly 5 inches of rainfall this year. This puts Oro Valley on par with the 2019 rainfall totals, where more than 5 inches fell in the same time period and resulted in a yearly total of 15 inches of rain. The wildflowers are blooming, so get out there and enjoy the views. That concludes my...
Okay. Then, thank you, Mr. Roberts. We also now have the approval, the review, item number 1, which is the review and approval of the February 16th meeting minutes. Commissioners, please raise your hand if you wish to speak or have any comments on the minutes. Well, with that, I'd say, will someone make a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
That's Commissioner Hawkinson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
That's Commissioner Mattson. All those in favor?
Aye.
It's a unanimous. Thank you so much, everyone. So now we'll go to discussion of meetings and events. And that was a list that John provided. And Dennis, you don't...
I do have one here.
Okay, so Mr. Roberts is going to go over that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Two items of note. April 8th, we're going to celebrate Oro Valley event at Steam Pump Ranch. The town's annual birthday celebration will be held again this year, and the Stormwater Utility will be participating, educating the public on what we do and how to protect their property from flood hazards. Come on out and enjoy the festivities. March 29th, Santa Cruz Watershed Collaborative Spring Forum. This is an event to discuss drought and water shortage issues, which include local conditions, resources, and environmental water needs. This is a great chance to discuss with our regional partners about climate projects, water policy, sustainability, and our impacts on our water resources.
Where will that be? I'm sorry.
I apologize.
It's at the Rito River and Craycroft Road. There's a parking lot on the northwest corner.
Okay.
We'll start around 8 a.m. and around 4.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Is that it?
That concludes.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. I keep getting the names. So with that, we have a presentation and discussion of the PIMA. Is item number two, which is, no, excuse me, item number three, which is the discussion of the Pima County Flood-Prone Land Acquisition Program by someone we all know, Mr. Joseph Kafari, Pima County Regional Flood Control District. So Joseph, would you please start?
So thank you guys for having me. I know that we all know each other, but for the record, my name is Joseph Kafari, and I'm with the Pima County Regional Flood Control District. I'm a program manager overseeing all of our outreach efforts. I'm our public information officer, so you may have seen me on the news or seen what I've written in the papers. So happy to be here, and this is our first, I'm going to say it's our first presentation regarding what's called the Flood-Prone Land Acquisition Program and our land stewardship goals. So FLAP, for short, so I'm going to be referring to as FLAP. Was anyone here for the 1983 floods? Excellent. For those of you who weren't, welcome to Tucson. So 1983 was our biggest flood of record on the Santa Cruz and the Rito River to that date. Flooding occurred after 6 to 7 inches fell across the area within a 5-day period. What really happened was the soils got super saturated. They weren't able to obtain that water, and so everything just started sheeting off. So we have some examples here. The biggest picture that you guys probably usually see is this structure being undercut. That's the Rito at Campbell Avenue, so Trader Joe's area right there. What's important to note here is there was over $64 million worth of damage in 1983 numbers. So, you know, inflation, all that kind of stuff. 12 people died as a result of that flood. And so after things receded, after things started drying out, Pima County Flood Control and the state as a whole really thought, how do we combat this? We don't want to be responsive, we want to be proactive. Let's get people away from those flood hazards. Let's protect property, let's do economic development. How do we do that? So what is the intent of FLAP? So it was initially focused on acquiring those damaged flood-prone areas as a result of the 1983 floods. But like I just said, we don't want to be reactive. We don't want to obtain them after the fact. Let's get out ahead of this. We have since expanded that into all flood-prone properties across Pima County and within the jurisdictions here as well. What we do is we're not buying structures, we're not living in them, we're not, you know, operating out of them. We're taking that land and we're actually restoring that to natural floodplain conditions. So that's demoing them, removing the pools, removing improvements, getting it back to that natural vacant land state to allow for that floodplain to go where it originally wanted to prior to development. What's very cool about this is that it's a voluntary program. We are not using eminent domain whatsoever as a flood control district. We will never do that. This is a willing buyer, willing seller program. So it's essentially a real estate transaction. And we'll get into the negotiations of it. But in order for flood control to obtain a property, it has to meet a couple criteria. So we're looking at the severity of the flood hazard. What's there? The location in relation to public lands. Does it make sense to buy this one piece and you have all this urban interface, or does it, you know, do we want to work from the outside in? And then the money, of course, the available program funding. So what is that funding? Primarily, it came from the general obligation bonds of 2004. It was a bonding system that the county pushed. A majority of our acreage was obtained through that funding source. A lot of upper land areas, part of the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan, the upper reaches as a part of that. We recognize this is a great program. So since 2004, roughly $1 million has been allocated specifically in the flood control budget for that. But we do have the ability to move money around through that, which we regularly do. And it usually comes from our capital improvement program. And it has that direct benefit as well. Pima County General Fund is needed. Grants and award applications, which we will talk about. And then miscellaneous, sometimes we need to obtain it through right-of-way or easements, utilities, donations. Oro Valley dealt with this, didn't really deal with it as a donation, but obtaining a golf course, we inherited the Green Valley's Kanoa Hills Trails. That's part of our FLAP acquisition. Same type of situation going on with the Vistoso. And then death and quitclaim deeds. It's people who pass away and in their wills have deeded over their land to the county. Wow. For this use. We actually get a surprising number of that.
Yeah.
Very nice. Bad with the time, but you know what I'm saying. So what are the benefits? Essentially, it eliminates the need for structural flood control improvements, such as that bank protection and levees. Really, it's removing that person from the flood hazard. So emergency vehicles don't have to respond there during a time of a flood. It opens up that area for that flood plain. It preserves and enhances the natural floodplain function, getting it back to where that land originally was. And then we have our side benefits of open space for wildlife, that movement, the corridors, preserving that native vegetation, riparian habitat, and then the recreational opportunities of hiking, birding, the loop, for that more active recreation aspect as well. A lot of that came from FLAP. So I'm going to give you some examples of what we're looking for. This is Old Spanish Trail, so way out east as you're heading towards Vail. Beautiful area if you actually see out there. But you can see here, we took a residence. This was in a FEMA special flood hazard area, zone AO2, AO3, which means there was 2 feet or 3 feet of water potentially running through that area. Very high hazard. These homes along here were what's called repetitive loss properties. So they had flooded more than twice within a 10-year period and had flood insurance claims. Mm-hmm. A repetitive loss property looks terrible on the community. You're only allowed to have about 15 throughout the whole community before FEMA starts to put on restrictions. So these examples actually came that we had to prove that these structures were gone. FEMA doesn't update their stuff. So this was an example of removing the structures and the people from that high threat flood hazard. This would be an example of erosion hazard. So this is the Rito River back in this was 1974. And now you can see that it's bank protected and we have the loop pathway and the George Meal Park. So this is right by the Jewish Community Center, Dodge area. So using that for a public benefit. This was after the Aspen Fire, which was a fire on Mount Lemmon in 2003. Think Bighorn Fire, essentially the same type of situation. Coming down all through here, we were worried about those debris flows, and they actually experienced some. So we knew that there were both erosion and floodplain hazards for these people. This is Lago del Oro and Boulder Ranch Bridge. And so you can see all of these houses are now gone. This is going to be the Catalina Regional Park. In the future, we're working on master plans for that. So the 2004 general obligation bonds, majority of that money for FLAP was focused in this Catalina area. So modern examples, as a result of the Bighorn Fire, Finger Rock, Wash, and Havasu Road. There were 8 repeated flooded structures in 2021 and 2022. So those were now called repetitive loss properties. Again, big mark on us. We're not doing enough to protect the public. That's what FEMA is saying. So what we had to do is essentially we want to buy them out. We want to remove that flood hazard from the property. So as of March 8th here, we have obtained 3 properties. 2 have been residences and 1's an assisted living facility, spending about $2.6 million. So that $1 million allocation that we get, right, that's gone. So we had to move some money around, got some money from the general fund source. We have made an offer on a 4th property, and we're currently in that negotiation stage. We're valuing it low in her eyes, and she's buying it high, and we need to meet in the middle there. What's neat about the 4th property and the what would be the other 5 is that we're potentially using hazard mitigation grant funds. So because of the Bighorn Fire, that's opening up a lot of funding opportunities from us. We have requested from FEMA that we use their money to buy out these properties, and we're looking like that's going to be successful. So that's really what we're focused on right now. What we're going to do with those structures as soon as we can is we're going to demolish them down to the slab, break up the bottoms of the pool and fill them in, and then move boulders around, because as you incorporate vacant land, right now there's the potential for it to spread out. We don't exactly know what it's going to do. So using those boulders as bin protection so there's not downstream impacts. If any of you are familiar with the area, there's a huge ponding source. It's about 4, so here's the roadway, and then there's a big basin down at the end there. It's about a 14-foot difference. In 2022, in June, that filled up and overtopped the road by 6 inches. The main result, or the main cause of that, is because there was about a 36-inch culvert running for the entire Finger Rock Wash. That's so undersized, so inadequate. It's not what contributed to the flooding of the homes, but as a result of the fire and those grants, we were able to remove all of the vegetation out of that basin, and our capital improvement office is going to begin work on a big redesign of that road. So I believe it's 4 box culverts are going to go in there and bring it up to current floodplain standards. So it's going to be pretty neat to see where that goes.
Joe?
Yeah.
Could you go back for a second? Yeah. I'm going to ask a question. All this blue and all those, are those houses? Property houses?
Yeah, I'm so used to looking at it that I should have explained it. So the blue outline here is the Finger Rock Wash floodplain. Mm-hmm. There's a slight green you can see. Yeah. That's additional floodplain from the Bighorn Fire.
Is that for the 100-year flood?
This is the 100-year flood.
And all those homes are in it?
Underlaid is the homes. This subdivision, if you want to call it that, was built in the 40s, 50s, and 60s before flood control was ever a thought. Especially in these mountainous areas where water just ran through.
Are these people now under this new edict that the feds are coming out, where they're going to have to buy?
So literally moments after it flooded, our emergency operations office were on site, utility companies were on site. There's a great response. And we met with the 8 property owners and said, listen, if you file a flood insurance claim, you're going to be termed as this, as repetitive loss, that opens up X, Y, and Z for flood control. Do you want to sell or do you want to stay? A lot of them, but all of them, wanted to sell because they've experienced 2021, 2022. Real estate prices are still pretty good, especially for that area of town. They can get out, you know, they get all that money. They've been there since the beginning. Houses are paid off, right? So that's a windfall, essentially, for them. In an older population, where now they can, you know, move in with others or something. So it was great to have that buy-in. I don't know how we would have responded if someone had said, no, I want to stay here. Mm. I think we would have had to do some structural improvements around the area, which gets tricky because you can't use public money for private benefit. So there would have been some manipulations that we would have had to do.
But there's more than 12 homes there.
Yes, there's more than 12, but some, for a variety of reasons, some had property in their house, some had it just in their garage, some had it on their pool. But there's 8 structures, and that's really what we're looking at. We're looking at the structure, not the property. Property, landscape, driveways, that can all get damaged. Yeah. But where you live is where we're really focused on. Yeah. Cool. So since 1983, we have acquired over 14,000 acres, floodplains in blue, acquired properties in red, doesn't say flat properties in red. And so you can see in the jurisdiction, so we have the big wash up here. We have some within the city of Tucson, down in Sarita area, and then extending out into Marana. Our biggest big purchase has been the Cienega Creek area, that corridor. That's a vital riparian area. Santa Cruz River, portions of it, and some overbank areas. I love this little guy down here. It's like a small, like 2-acre. I don't know how he got it, but I told our field crew that I want to go out there and take a look. So, waiting for that. So, yeah, so you can kind of see, obviously it's focused in those floodplain areas and then those major corridors where we want to do protection. Mount Lemmon even has a couple, and that was the result of that Aspen fire. So, that 14,000 acres, we can't just let it go to nothing, right? We have to manage it in some respect. We're responsible for it, the weeds, the homeless, sharp objects, anything like that. We need to maintain that as a public land. So we have come up with what's called the Land Stewardship Program. We have one person who's dedicated to it, and then she has a bunch of people who help in the office. So we talked about the Cienega Creek. Swan Wetlands is another one. If you're at the Rito in Swan, you can see some restoration. Keno Environmental Restoration Project, which John Spiker was part of, in that area. That's the soccer fields, baseball fields, right off the And then the Big Wash Ecosystem Restoration Site, which is in our backyard here. Yeah. So we'll focus on that. So you guys are familiar with this. It's the Big Wash west of the Oro Valley Marketplace. It was acquired, it's a 77-acre site, and it was acquired in 2009 by the Flood Control District through an agreement with Pima County as a whole and Vestar when they started building out the marketplace. The agreement required Vestar to restore the area, which was once an agricultural field. Vicki Cox Golder from Golder Ranch, Catalina area, her family had owned it. And then, of course, Native Americans, tribes back, you know, before that. So taking a denuded area, rehabbing it, making it look like the general area around it through the use of recontouring the land, using micro topography, so just a minor grading is essentially what that is. Planting over 10,000 native plants through there, and then hydro seeding with the native mix to allow for that establishment. So you can see the agricultural aspect of what it looked like. That is the Oro Valley Hospital right there. And then you can see just that change in 2 years.
Wow. Wow.
So that's a huge, huge change. So the agreement, we talked about that active and passive recreation. This is going to be passive, right? You're just walking through, you're looking at birds and wildlife. But we wanted to have that active part of it. And so the loop was created based off of that. So that's obviously the walking path next to it. And then the maintenance road to get throughout the area has been accepted by Oro Valley Parks as a designated trail. So it's actually, you know, you can go in there, follow the paths. Pima County and Oro Valley and some HOAs are actually going through right now, and they're going to do some offshoot trails that are in there, take some of those wildcat trails and make them actually established. So, if you guys do walk in that area, you may see some work in the future. So 2008 to 2020, this is what it looked like. You got a Walmart, you got the Best Buy, was once the Best Buy through there. But you can see just this degradation of the area. And now look at this, 2020. And then we got all this healthy riparian vegetation. This was once on City of Tucson's urban heat island. index maps, and it's now like a medium zone. And that's because of that shade canopy. If you guys walk that area behind the In-N-Out, lush, beautiful vegetation. So this is a huge ecosystem restoration project that we're very proud of and continue to work on. All of these land stewardship things, we visit them at least annually. The remote ones are annually. The ones that are more accessible are at least 2 or 3 times a year, just to check on the establishment of trees and stuff like that. So 3 key takeaways I want you guys to know. FLAP is a very important floodplain management tool. So who's going to think that just getting a bulldozer and grading the land is going to be floodplain management? Well, we talked about it's removing the people from the hazard. It's removing that land from the public payroll. Or the private payroll, now the county owns it and we can manage it. The land stewardship program is a framework for growing that acreage. It's identifying those additional areas, where can we further obtain, and what can we do for the restoration of the floodplain and make it a benefit for the public. And then we're always looking for ways to collaborate on the land stewardship side. We contract with Tucson Clean and Beautiful, Sonoran Institute, a bunch of non-governmental organizations. Tucson Clean and Beautiful is literally out in the rivers and on our flat properties weekly, and they're picking up trash, and that's the small styrofoam cups, pallets, shopping carts. We'll go through and remove the couches and the big stuff, but we rely on those volunteers to go through and on our properties. We just can't manage 14,000 acres for every little piece of trash. And then, just having that collaboration, talking with Oro Valley, talking with Marana, making a holistic floodplain management. Water does not stop at those jurisdictional boundaries. We need to keep it flowing. You guys are at the upper level, so we're taking in, and Marana sits lower than us. So having that tiered approach is really going to be beneficial. So, this is a picture that I took when it was like my first week with the district, and I was out at that old Spanish Trail location prior to demolishing. Those areas, and so that kind of gives you, this area is now open to allow for that 2 to 3 feet of water to run through there and not impact anyone.
Where on Old Spanish Trail was that, John? Sorry.
There was a cross-section on there. There's like that little neighborhood, it's kind of, you're just following the road, it kind of sits in a valley. Yeah. I don't know that.
Yeah, it's just, I went, before we moved to this part of town, I lived out there, that's why I was trying to figure out where that area was. Where the general store is. Okay, I know where you're talking
just
about.
Just west of there.
Okay.
I think it was like an arena. So
yeah,
like,
that was. Yeah. It was an old rodeo arena area.
Rodeo arena thing. Had a little well, I appreciate it. Any
further questions? Well, John, thank you very much. That was wonderful.
Joe. I ruined it. I
Yeah,
talking
you got
your
me
head.
Started.
Hey, if I could be John Spiker, I'd be happy.
Bring him back.
So with that, we're going to go to agenda item 4, discussion of stormwater utility development review. This is where John thought, we've sort of seen the end in evaluating what the department does. Now we're going to see what they do more at the beginning of the process. And that will be Mr. Roberts presenting. Please go ahead.
I'm gonna take off. Thank you guys.
Okay. Take care, John.
Thank you much.
Thanks a lot.
Well, hi again. I'm Dennis Roberts, senior stormwater engineer. I'm a professional engineer and a certified floodplain manager. One of my roles here with the town is to review drainage design for new development and projects. So that's what John thought would be good for us to talk about today. Since I'm the sole reviewer for the stormwater utility, I want to give you a summary of kind of the process, and then I'll walk through some of the details on each stage of the process. But stormwater utility is tasked with upholding water quality and quantity regulations by the federal and state governments. In my role, I'm tasked with the responsibility of drainage design review on behalf of the town. This includes reviewing proposed drainage design on planning and construction documents for all proposed developments in town. The drainage review process starts with the entitlement processing, which may include general plan amendments, rezones, development plans for commercial development, and subdivision developments. Once entitlements are approved, improvement plans are submitted for permits. In this process, we take a look at the details to verify proposed grading and infrastructure design is substantiated by specific hydrology and hydraulic design reporting plans, details, and calculations. Once permits are pulled and the project is in construction, we will assist in the site inspection process, specifically for improvements related to drainage and flood control infrastructure and stormwater pollution prevention mitigation. When permits are closed and project warranty periods are up for review, we assist in that site inspection process and help them close out on site permits. Stormwater is in the review process for all projects in the town from conception through construction to final use. The process of documenting the design is important. This is, well, all this is all we have for a basis of design. When I first started here, I would constantly get calls about, I have a drainage issue here, or my neighbor's doing this. And having these documents recorded with the drainage information, how plans were approved, is very helpful. So I'm very particular on what I'm looking for in the plan. So this also helps when there's a development being proposed upstream and downstream. To be able to provide this information to the engineers is invaluable, because then they may save them some time with already having drainage information and the hydraulic information for a channel that they may be dealing with. Yes.
Commissioner Crocker, so would this be like in 1984 when they developed like Kanata Hills area? There would be records of why certain neighborhoods have drainage.
That's right.
Drainage basins and detentions and dams and that kind of stuff.
So we do get quite a few calls from HOAs, yes, who ask about drainage design, okay, that was approved for their development, and we help them find that information, okay, and show them what was approved and provide any kind of analysis or investigation. Okay. That maybe
thank you.
Just that. So the process of all development within Redmond Torrey floodplain is required to submit a floodplain use permit application. The town regulates platted and special flood study hazard areas and FEMA regulatory floodplains. We are included in the review of most projects, regardless if they are in a regulatory floodplain or not. We need to be able to verify the proposed improvements are going to drain properly and meet the requirements for grading and drainage. Development review process is the same for most developments where they follow the process listed above, except for the single-family custom home sites. Single-family residents are approved through a building site grading drainage plan review process. And they typically already have the entitlements. But most of the other projects will have to go through a pre-application and neighborhood meeting to start to flush out what staff comments may be or what neighbors may have concerns about. And then it moves on to the applicant prepares the documents based on that feedback. And they have to supply a formal submittal with application and go through a review process with all the review staff and any external reviewers that may be involved if they're adjacent to Pima County or they have Tucson Water. So they're all included in the review. And once they've gone through a couple rounds of submittals, they'll come back and have a plan that staff that supports, and it'll go to planning and zoning where they'll provide their recommendation on the project. And then they'll have a period of time where they can address any kind of constraints or recommendations or conditions with the approval from P&Z, and then it goes into the council to be determined if they approve the project or not. And then it moves on to improvement plans. The online application process starts at the Town Oro Valley Community and Economic Development website. So each applicant comes in, they have to create a profile and they create a portal for themselves to process permits. When the
three application submittals come through SmartGov. Reviewers are notified to review the submittal package, and we are expected that there will probably be a pre-app meeting that happens on a Thursday. We have our design review committee every Thursday. So sometimes we'll have two, we'll have three, sometimes we won't have any.
Who's not, who? What's the composition of the design review committee?
It's everybody included in the review would be like planning, zoning, fire department, police department, water company, the sewer department. Or
so it'd be a representative from each?
Yes, so it'd be a representative of each. Everybody has it on their schedule to meet on Thursday to have the discussion. And they let us know ahead of time if there's a pre-app that we need to take a look at for a meeting. The town staff viewers and other stakeholders like Pima County, Flood Control, or Tucson Water are invited. This gives us an opportunity to assist the applicant with direct links to the drainage criteria manual and the applicable checklist. We provide input on specific design drainage information we're looking to review, report on any known existing issues with the site that may need to improve to comply with current code, and provide any record drainage information related to the site or adjacent to it. Pre-application process provides the applicant to with the most up-to-date base information, gives them project constraints and opportunities. The development review, development plan, and tenant plat review process is taking the concept to a schematic review. We're reviewing the grading and the drainage design, the schematics and supporting calculations for proof that the drainage scheme is going to work and that your drain and the design is not going to have significant changes before they go into final engineering or construction documents. I'm reviewing to see if they're in accordance with any master plan drainage reports. Are they showing all the conditions on adjacent land affecting the grading and drainage design? Is there a regulatory floodplain? Is there hydraulic structures with appropriate drainage information noted on the plan? Does the plan match the report? Are they addressing first flush, water harvesting, and stormwater pollution prevention mitigation requirements? When a floodplain use permit is attached to a development permit, meaning that they're within a flood a regulatory floodplain, it's typical that they are required to perform an assessment of pre versus post development, looking at existing conditions versus proposed conditions. And they have to adhere to our floodplain ordinance, which has limits to flood depths and velocities at property lines. An existing conditions analysis assessment is required for every project to determine the drainage constraints to plan for development. The hydrology analysis to determine how much stormwater to expect during significant storm events, and hydraulic analysis to show how the floodplain and drainage is currently draining through the project and what the water surface elevations are to start with. Specifically, we want to see the conditions at the property line because we want to make sure there's no impacts to any of the neighboring property. And then once we have our drainage criteria manual, as you're familiar with, it pretty much has every checklist, procedure, method that we look for in the town, because we have a very specific erosion issue out here that maybe Pima County and the town Tucson doesn't have to deal with, so we have a little bit more of a robust requirement. Once the existing conditions are known, and the next is to demonstrate that the proposed conditions for the development satisfy the DCN and floodplain stormwater ordinances. What are the new flow conditions going to be like? What are the water surface elevations once they've graded in fill slopes and put in channels? And what are the velocities in the channel outlets of the culverts? Are they providing the erosion protection that's needed? How is sediment impacting your design and how are they taken into account? Is the project providing legal access for maintenance to their culverts and their drainage facilities? So a lot of this is what we're asking for, and it's all outlined in DCM. And newly added was the maintenance manual, because really the HOA and property management companies and property owners should have an idea how to maintain their stormwater facilities. And once the applicant passes, once the applicant has been through the improvement plan review process and they've had permits in hand, they move into inspections. And we are included in a couple of the inspections, depending on what the project is, but all of them are going to have initial SWIP inspections where we go out and we check the grading limits and make sure they have stormwater pollution prevention mitigation in place before they actually start grading. And then when the process is, when they're in process, depending on what they have in the project, if they're slope protection, culverts, flood walls, anything that's drainage-related, flood control infrastructure, we're going to want to see it and provide some input or give them some feedback on it. But once they get through construction and the site's completed, then there's a final SWIP inspection where we verify, is the site stabilized? Is it got rails and goalies everywhere? Is the hydroseed taking as it should? And then after that process, there's a final closeout for the permit where we will have a say on, are the improvements completed? Is the site stabilized? Is the floodplain use permit been adhered to? And once they close out, depending on the project, if there's a public improvement component to it, there's typically a warranty period. We're included on that inspection as well, where we go out and after a year, we basically do the same thing. Is it stabilized? Are the drainage features, are they working? And we provide input back on that and hold the developers to meeting the approved plan set. So in a nutshell, that's how development process is for me on all these projects. Is there any questions I can address?
So are there two different sets of inspectors, one in the development part and then one in the maintenance part within the department?
So there's multiple inspectors. So there is engineering has their own site inspector who goes and he'll look at the roadway, the sidewalks, and the materials and make sure everything's built. Drainage, we're looking at all that. And the building also looks at anything related to the foundation, scour protection walls.
Well, my question was, within stormwater utility, do those inspectors do both the final inspection of...
Oh.
Or, and then later on, do maintenance inspection. They do inspections in every
There's
aspect.
There's interim inspections. Yes. Yes. Okay. So there is Jane Hutchinson.
Yeah, we know Jane.
So she's our inspector, and we provide support to her.
Okay.
So this process, in a way... helps us in limiting our liability.
Absolutely.
For the not only us, but the developer too.
That's what we're trying to do.
Because legally, if say there was a problem, all of a sudden something got washed out, a homeowner might not only sue the developer, but sue the city.
That's what we're trying.
So by having this process, we have not only a technical process, but we have a minimizing of legal liability.
That's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to help the HOAs. We're trying to help the property owners, the developers.
Everyone. So everyone benefits.
Yeah.
And you can convey that to the developer that in the long run we might be saving them from being sued by someone.
It's an easy argument when we talk about it that way.
Thank you, Commissioner Mattson. Yeah. Commissioner Hawkins. Yeah.
In your review, how much emphasis is given to the various levels of floodplains, like the FEMA regulatory floodplains, and the town has their local floodplains, designated, right?
Yes.
And for what's the criteria of that? A stream that carries how many CFM?
So the requirement is it's regulatory if it's over 100 CFS.
Yeah.
But if it's a platted floodplain or...
But how about a local floodplain?
So a local floodplain over 100 CFS, if it's a special study floodplain or a platted floodplain, then it goes through... The only difference in the process, if it's a FEMA floodplain, it doesn't go to FEMA. We review it with the same intensity as a FEMA floodplain than we would for a regular local floodplain. So there's the same ordinances apply as far as the velocities and limitations to elevations of the property line.
Go ahead, Rich.
How about local areas that are in areas that have hillsides and all, that have small streams running off, but you have more or less sheet flow coming off hillsides, and you've got steep going into flat, so that acts more or less like a alluvial fan, perhaps?
So that the engineer designing the project will have to address the site conditions, whatever they may be up against. And when we get pre-apps in, I do go out to the site and I do look at, for those situations. And what I see a lot here in town is people design these protected the slopes, and they just let the water cascade over it. They don't really address how water needs to be drained around the fill slopes, around the retaining walls. We have an erosion issue out here, so that is a big emphasis in what we're looking at. And with erosion, you've got sediment. So sediment is another component that's taken into account for culverts and channels and outlets and pretty much everything that's designed now.
This may not be a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And if it's not, just tell me. I'm going to ask Scott, because I think he's been around long enough to, perhaps longer than you have, Dennis.
He has.
At least here.
Do you see any change in the role that stormwater has in reviewing some of these local problem areas? Like Dennis was just describing, going out and looking at them and making an on-site inspection compared to what it used to be.
When to when?
Say from the mid to late, between around 08 to 012 to now.
Let me attest to something. Look, with the drainage criteria manual and the new ordinance, that's what I got to come in as my tools and my ammo to, regulate the engineers and direct them towards an appropriate design. I feel it's been very helpful since then. And the stories that I hear, those weren't in place before. Some of the requirements that we had weren't in place before. But this is all helping, people are seeing better designs, less erosion. That's what we're going for, is easier maintenance, accessible maintenance to culverts and outlets and channels. These are all requirements that are being put on new development from, I guess it would say, mid-2020. So it's not that long.
This is Commissioner Crocker. As far as there are any real arguments with developers on structures and things, or is there everyone uses the same floodplain and everyone has the same ideas, or you still they have to meet your conditions before they go?
It's easy having the drainage criteria manual and the ordinance, because I refer to that.
Okay.
If you want to go beyond that, then you have to talk to Paul Kiesler.
Okay.
So that part, it's an argument, it's not that hard.
Okay.
And it's probably easier for them too, Gary Mattson, the commissioner.
Yeah.
It's easier for them because their company that's setting up the site, because they have to follow your standards.
So they have to follow our standards, and if they want to go outside of our standards, they still have to do the analysis and compare it.
And for a justification.
For a justification, yeah.
Okay. Have any other questions? Well, thank you, Dennis.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dennis.
It was an excellent presentation.
Boy, I'm getting smart on this. So let's move on to future agenda items. I spoke with John 2 days ago, and I told him I was not going to be here in April and May. I've got foreign trips planned, and way before I knew I was going to be chair. And I was just wondering, does anyone else know if they're definitely not going to be here in April or May?
I know I won't be here in April.
Okay.
As of today, I will be here.
Well, what John wanted to say was, you weren't here for our last meeting, but we pretty much are done with the budget process. He's really just looking for us to recognize, rather than saying staff recommends, he's going to have the report of all the things we went through. So he said, it's too late to not have a meeting proposed for April, but we actually have to have a meeting in May. It doesn't seem that there's any driving issues that at this time. So I was wondering your feelings about just canceling the May meeting.
Good. All right. Gary, do you have any ideas?
Well, I'm just thinking of April. I know I'm going to be at a conference, a couple of conferences. May, I'm quite open, okay. So I don't.
I'll be here in May, but okay. If...
So we will have an April meeting. That was
yes.
What's going to be covered in April?
I don't know at this time.
Because you won't be here, and I think I might have a conflict.
Well,
so that's two of us that won't be here.
I don't quite understand this, but at a certain point right now, we have to make a decision.
Yeah.
Do we want to cancel?
Whether April or May. Well, I was
April's
thinking
too late.
Yeah, April's too late. We have to go with April unless we don't have a quorum.
Yeah.
You know, it's too late to pre-cancel.
So
May.
we can just say let's go and see if we have a quorum or not. Just want to get your feelings on that.
Yeah. So John's position right now is he doesn't have any pressing agenda items right now. Then I would recommend that, at least at this point, we waive the May and reconvene in June after April.
Okay. Do we need a motion for that, do you know, or anyone, or is it just...
Yes, we do.
Do we?
We do.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We do. We have to... Excuse me. I formally make a motion that we cancel the May meeting.
Okay.
Of the Stormwater Utility Commission.
Do I have any?
I'll second that.
Okay.
Since there is no pressing.
Yeah, okay. Does anyone have any other discussion before we vote? Okay. All those in favor of canceling the May meeting?
Aye.
Aye. That's everyone. So thank you. So future agenda items will be the budget, obviously getting that final presentation and whatever else goes. It was great to have these two presentations today, and we appreciate that from you guys. You've really gotten our understanding of what's going on. So with that, let's move on to adjournment. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Before we do that, what will the April meeting, do we know what's going to be on
John,
the agenda?
John doesn't have an agenda set up, is what we've heard so far.
Okay.
Well, we're not for sure we have a quorum.
We may not have a quorum.
Well, that's yep.
Yeah, we'll get the agenda and we'll figure out who all is here, and go from there.
This is Dennis Roberts. Is there any items that you would like on the agenda?
I don't have any pressing ones right now.
I can't think of anything at this point. If I do, Dennis, I'll drop a note.
John has a list of some items.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, with that, then, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Actually, did you have a question or a comment?
No.
Sir. Okay. I'll make a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Second.
Commissioner Hawkins, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.